providing inspiration and community for women in business of Middle Tennessee. This is Powered by Her with Tiffany Anton.
I am Tiffany Anton, your host here at Powered by Her. If you want to know more about what we're doing, you can head over to poweredbyhercommunity.com. Find out all the events. We've really expanded what we're doing with Powered by Her this year with events. We have a book club coming up in May. And you can find out what we're doing with Kenya. So if you go back and listen to our 100th episode, you can hear a little bit more about the girls that we're mentoring in Kenya. And that program is well underway and we're very, very excited. And so you can follow us on social media and find out more about that. But today we have Dr. Helen Hunt. I like to throw that doctor in there. How do you feel about that?
I mean, it all depends on the role that I'm interacting in.
Do you think sometimes people are like, doctor, but you're too good for me? I think I get annoyed when people like kind of force that, like professors kind of force that. But I have some PTSD from things a little bit, I think. So anyway, Dr. Helen Hunt, you are the director of the Women's Center at Tennessee Tech. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Women's Center is?
So the Women's Center is a support unit on campus, and our overall goal is to help promote gender equity at Tech and in the larger community. And we do that in three main ways. One is providing educational programming. So we do that across a variety of different platforms. Sometimes we do virtual events. Sometimes we bring in speakers. Sometimes we do stuff like this, where you can listen to podcast episodes. And we also run educational content on our social media. So that's at TN Tech Women's Center on Instagram and Facebook, because we're not special enough to be on, like, you know, Snapchat and all that other newfangled stuff.
TikTok is the word.
TikTok's
the devil.
Out. We're not even on TikTok on the internet on Tech's campus.
Yes.
We also provide resources. So we have some resources in office. Like, we have a library. We have menstrual supplies. We can provide sustainable menstrual supplies for students. And we are, think of us as like a doorway to other resources. So if people need connections or help, we can help guide you to the things that are going to be able to provide you the services you need. And finally, we strive to create community. So sometimes it can feel like, you know, you're alone in your little weird self out there in a sea of 10,000 students and 1,000 employees. And so we try to provide community for people who are like-minded and who are interested in this kind of stuff. And we do that through, like, the journal we publish and the events that we do and that sort of thing.
One thing I want to point out, you kind of skipped through it real quickly, is that you said equality for women. And I think sometimes that equality, people who can kind of get easily offended or feathers ruffled, feel like, well, equality just means that you want to be better than men. And it's like, well, no, that's not the case.
So we actually follow an equity model. And an equity model is the idea that everybody needs different things to get to the same place. So my favorite metaphor for the equity model is tall fence that you can't see over. Mm-hmm. We all know people who are different heights.
Yeah.
And if we want everyone to be able to see over the fence, not everybody's going to be able to, depending on the height of the fence. An equality model would give everyone the same size box to stand on. So you would still end up with people different with different views. And some people aren't going to be able to see over the fence. An equity model gives people the size of box they need to all get to the same eye level.
I love that. And I've never heard that analogy before, but I feel like that could really, people could really cling to that and understand that.
Yeah.
I say often, me going to college, me being to where I'm at today, financially, motivationally, I think there's many people in the world that have struggled more than I have. Mm-hmm. And there's many people that haven't struggled as much as I have.
Mm-hmm.
But aren't we all trying to get to the same finish line, you know, kind of live full lives? And I mean, we hopefully. So somebody getting a scholarship to college because their family, you know, wasn't financially as set as my family, maybe that's okay. Or, you know, should people be penalized because they don't have the financial resources to go to college? And so I think that equality model,
equity model
is it. That sounds amazing.
I think it's
just such a good analogy too, for people to understand, is that we're not trying to give people, you know, a box that puts them over the fence.
Right.
We're just trying to give everybody a box to see over the fence.
Right.
And we all have different heights, and this just is the way we're born and it's the way we're made. And
yeah. And we're the Women's Center, but our goal is gender equity in general. And one of the things that can happen, especially, you know, at a university, is we have disciplines get kind of like organized by gender. And so you'll have some disciplines that have way more women and some disciplines that have way more men. And all those different disciplines need different kinds of support. Mm-hmm. And so a gender equity model says that, you know, we're here to promote equity for nursing that has mostly women and very few men, as well as engineering that's predominantly men and has only very few women. So yeah. We're here to promote everyone being able to see over the fence the same way.
So the college I went to was, when I started, it was 7 men to 1 woman because it was a tech school. But my discipline was math. And mm-hmm. we had 10 people that started when I started. And 8 of them were women and 2 of them were men.
So,
it was just so weird. Like, I'm in this university where this is what my freshman mm-hmm. class is. And then, you know, but my discipline itself was so different. And so it just... Anyway.
And the other thing I always tell people is everyone has gender. You know, so if we're here for gender equity, you know, men are impacted by gender. Mm-hmm. You know, we have all kinds of different ways that our gender impacts us. So we're here for everyone. Our content is targeted towards, you know, being the intervention that women in particular and other gender minorities need. But everyone is needed for the effort towards gender equity.
So we're going to take a second and thank our partner for this episode, which is the Tennessee Tech Women's Center. And so we appreciate the support and the partnership that we've been able to have over the past 6 months. And we look forward to how we can make this grow and work more in the future. Tell us what's coming up in April at the Women's Center.
Great. Yes. So April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So we have a big event for that called the Clothesline Project on April 11th. And that's going to be inside the Rodin University Center. And what it is a bunch of t-shirts that survivors of intimate partner violence have been making for the last few decades at Tech. And it's a way to witness to the experiences of survivors and also to bear witness for yourself if you want. We have t-shirts that people can make and they want to add to our clothesline. We'll also have resources for people for how to help survivors of intimate partner violence, and then also how to get resources yourself if you need that.
And if you want to hear more, Helen and I talked last episode about sexual assault and domestic violence. Mm-hmm. It was a bit uncomfortable for me, but I think we did okay. I've heard some good feedback, and I think it was very worthwhile topic for people to hear us talk about. And I think it's something that often people want to, me included, you know, glaze over and not talk about. And so I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to sit down and talk about it with you.
Yeah.
Which leads us into what we're going to talk about today. Yes. And so when we've been kind of planning this out, we were talking about misogynistic, which is a hard word for me to say sometimes. It feels like a lot. Comments like when you're, whether it's that you're, going into a business pitch, a good friend of mine had talked about a lot of the people she was pitching her business to were medical doctors. Mm. And, you know, she would feel kind of less than sometimes. And this happens kind of across the board and kind of how to deal with that. And so tell me, I guess, what's the definition of misogyny?
Misogyny is pretty much just like a prejudice against, or usually it includes bad feelings against women. Oftentimes people will not think they have active bad feelings towards women, but you might have underlying beliefs that women are different than, or maybe have different capacities than men, less suited for, you know, pitching business or assuming authoritative roles or, you know, being in leadership, that sort of thing. And those might be underlying beliefs that reflect some misogyny, some prejudice against women.
Well, and let's just be honest, it's such a fine line that women have to walk in a leadership position to be not the female dog, to not be the bitchy one, you know, to be in a leadership position and not be intimidating. And I'm often told, well, you know how people view you. And it's like, I don't know, because I at the end of the day, like I really do care a lot about people. And it's, I mean, people will say to me, you're not the hugging type. And I'm like, am I not really the hugging type? I think I have softness to me, but it doesn't apparently come across that way. You know, there's a different set of cards that I have to deal with sometimes.
Oh, I just think this is so interesting. So one of the things that we know about women in leadership, there's just like so much stuff that's so interesting, but okay, I try not to go down too much of a rabbit hole. But one is about our expectations for nurturing and softness for women in leadership, and that women are expected to be, they just have a different set of expectations around behavior than men tend to have. And managing those expectations of nurturing and softness while needing to be, you know, results oriented or whatever it is that you need to be, or even dealing with just like individually different personality traits. I mean, all leaders deal with, you know, needing to be approachable and yet, you know, authoritative, but can be especially difficult for women when those stereotyped expectations about women's behavior come into play. And what one thing that's interesting about this is that it can also happen among women in particular, especially in fields. I was just reading this research this last fall. In fields that are heavily male dominated, that have few women leaders, women who are under those leaders tend to especially expect nurturing and like a more of a soft approach from those other women leaders. And so we think about, like, one of the ways we think about misogyny is that men are the only ones who are misogynistic. But that's just not true, right? Yeah. So if we think about misogyny as a set of beliefs about women that can keep women in a specific place and like limits women's capacity to behave, everyone can believe those and everyone can like fall into those and endorse them and also like perpetuate and reinforce them. So, you know, I personally have recently struggled with this exact type of thing that you're talking about, thinking about, you know, how do I have authority in different situations in my workplace? Like, so I'm sometimes in the classroom with my students. I'm sometimes leading a, you know, a workshop for the Women's Center. And sometimes I'm just going to a training thinking I'm just like, you know, Helen over there. But then people are looking at me and seeing me, oh, like this is that person. And I'm like repping something I don't necessarily think about. And so like when I'm like tired and had a bad day and I'm annoyed about like my student emails, you know, and don't come off as like, as nurturing potentially or as ladylike as someone might expect.
Yeah. Well, and we, Helen and I are transplants. We yes. are not from this area. We live in, for those of you who are not local to our podcast, we live in the Bible Belt mm-hmm. and it's a very conservative, you know, women should be a lot of things mm-hmm. and we're not necessarily those things sometimes.
Yeah.
And so
not always those.
I mean, it used to kind of be almost people would say, well, we finally understand you. We know you're not from here. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Like, that sounds like such a bad thing. But I do think knowing kind of your audience sometimes, like, I do want to just let my hair down and drop an F-bomb in my personal time. You know, that's not how I act professionally, but I should be able to do that when I want to. But then, you know, there's a lot of judgment and stuff.
Yeah. And I really think that geography affects these expectations of femininity and like what does appropriate, you know, womanhood look like.
Right.
Okay. So this might feel like it's like a total sidebar, but I promise it's not. And I was thinking about this in terms of some really good stuff I've been reading about Kate Middleton, right? Because for those of you who are not royal watchers, like Kate disappeared for a while and yeah. people are like, oh my God, maybe she gave a liver to King Charles or like whatever, you yeah. know? And then she's like showed back up now.
Right.
I was like, when I was younger, I was like, she's the epitome of like womanly perfection. Mm-hmm. Like her hair's always perfect. Her, you know, her outfits are always perfect. She's always
the
smiling.
Shoes match, the blazer, shoes, you know, and all that. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, especially reading this commentary about the role she serves, it's like she is kind of like the perfect ideal of like white femininity. Mm-hmm. And our departure from that role, which for me is quite huge many times,
yeah,
you know, is like there's a lot of pressure in there sometimes for the ways that we fall short as opposed to the ways like maybe people have expectations for us.
Would that be considered misogynistic, your thoughts of the perfection of like Kate Middleton?
Well, I mean,
because to me, at least sometimes it's like, well, I kind of feel like, well, of course she has perfect hair because she has somebody get her, like, I mm-hmm. kind of get a little judgy sometimes.
Well, I think one of the things about Kate Middleton and other people who are very visible as these beautiful, like mother, powerful women mm-hmm. is they make the labor of being that person look and disappear. They just seem to effortlessly be that person. And then we can forget of all of the labor and power and frankly, money that goes into producing that mm-hmm. image. And so, yeah, I think that my like kind of fantasy about being able to be Kate Middleton is part of me buying into this somewhat misogynistic dream that, you know, this is the one way to be an ideal woman. And that is like an oppressive structure. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Well, and I think it's interesting. You said the one way to be, you know, a feminine, perfect woman. Mm-hmm. Who says what's the way we're supposed to be? Like,
well, you, I know that's a good question, except for if you start to think about the pressures on that mm-hmm. and the way you get flack for not being that, is the answer is a lot of people mm-hmm. and a lot of culture. And even if it's just little things like somebody crabbing about you, maybe saying the S word, which yeah. S-H-I-T, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Or being offended by that. Whereas, yeah. or like, for example, you know, some people I know at work have gotten away with tremendous things, and then other people get in trouble for cussing, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So...
Well, so I had an old boss that I worked for him for about 2 or 3 months. It was the most intense job interview process I've ever gone through. And it mm-hmm. was like 5 hours a week. This was a part-time job. This was not even a full-time job. And I didn't really know him that well, but I was doing some marketing and social media kind of stuff for him. And then he wanted to outsource the social media. And he said, I want you to go work for this person. You know, you can stay on the team, but you need to go work. And it was in an office and it's just not where I was at. And so I said, thanks, but no thanks. And he said, well, let me give you some parting thoughts. And he oh. said, as a woman with an attitude like yours, as a woman being as aggressive as you are, you're going to get fired from a lot of jobs if you don't figure out how to kind of tone that down. Mm. And I was like, I don't think you can say that to me. And it was very interesting. I mean, I've always kind of known I'm more of, I probably operate in my masculine energy a lot more than maybe mm. average women. I don't know. I mean, I don't know who says what's average, who says what's normal.
Well, and who says what's masculine energy? That right. whole, like, what goes into defining what that is yeah. is just as made up as everything
yeah.
else.
Yeah. So, well, and I kind of got, but the fact that he started the sentence with as a woman
yeah.
just was like, well, why as a man can you be more aggressive than I can be as a woman? Like, I don't
understand. Misogyny.
Yeah. There,
patriarchy. That's there, why.
The Barbie movie, patriarchy.
So how did you react? What did you do?
I said, thank you. Goodbye.
Did you take that into account? Did you try to change your behavior in the future?
I don't think so. No, when I interviewed for the current job I'm at, I mentioned this to my mm-hmm. current boss and he said, well, I kind of like aggressive around here. So that works well.
Yeah.
But the thing is like, how many times do we go through like situations like that or conversations like that? And we just kind of cower. No one has like, this man is now going, probably hiring other women, mm-hmm. he, you know, running a business. And still saying things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think how often are people making comments or doing things or having thoughts that they're not getting called out for and they're not able to correct their behavior? I didn't feel like I had behavior to correct in this situation. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a little bit, I'm a little bit more aggressive, but like me or not, this is who I am.
Yeah. Can we break this down yeah, a little bit? Because yeah. this is like, I think so good. So I think that it sounds to me like basically you were faced with a choice, right? So you got feedback that you were disrupting your gender role, like, and that you were like, okay, this is going to be negative for you in the future. So you really fundamentally have two choices: try to change your behavior to conform to the gender expectations, or try to find somewhere that's a better fit and is like more accommodating to how you express your, you know, gender persona as a woman. And it sounds like you went for like the second one. And mm-hmm. to me, I think that's an ideal situation, is to find a different spot. But we are not always in positions where we can do that. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we do make the choices to try to change to better conform to the stereotypical expectations of gender, which I want to put on the table here are very strongly influenced by race, you know, and Tiffany and I are white women, and we're talking about from the experiences of being white, and especially things about like being aggressive or angry. Those are all stereotypes that are heavily inflected by race. And so the other thing we can think about is like, you're talking about in that moment, could you have like, you just kind of were like, okay, I'm going to minimize this problem, get out and like mm-hmm. do my thing. So one of the things we can talk about today is like, in those moments, what are your options for what to do? And I really want to like reinforce, no one's going to know better than you in that moment whether the choice is right to minimize the impact on you and say nothing, or to take it as an opportunity to tell that person that something's going on, because the costs of saying things can be so real, you know. And all of us, well, not all of us, there are probably some people who are independently wealthy here, but many listeners are probably dependent on their paychecks mm-hmm. to, you know, pay their mortgage or their rent or whatever, like me. And so we can't underestimate the power that employers have over us. So in that moment, there are kind of two basic ways. If you decided you wanted to address that person's behavior, one we think of as calling out and the other one is calling in. And it really comes down to whether you think that person's behavior is modifiable or not. Like, are they someone who is, you know, saying this, whether they're going to be receptive to like critically reflecting on their ideas. Maybe I'm just getting more jaded as I get older. And I tend to feel like less and less are there opportunities for calling in. But if you think of like, okay, you think maybe this person just doesn't really know what the impact of what they're saying and doing, and they just need an opportunity to reflect. This is when you can use calling in strategies. And those are things that are like softer and designed to minimize, like to let the person save face, minimize their like distress and be like, oh gosh, you know, when you say that, I feel like blah, 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 or, oh man, you know, what do you think about, like, if you say that, you know, the impact might be on women, or why do you think it might be worse for women to be aggressive than men? You know, trying to get them from like to kind of reflect, or, you know, using your good I statements that maybe you learned in therapy like me. Mm-hmm. But those are things that are only going to work if that person is in a place where they're correctable, you know, or they're going to be willing to self-reflect. And I don't know whether you think this guy would have been or not.
I don't think so, but.
Well, and, you know, I think you're right to say that that person, you know, probably that underlying attitude or underlying belief is still there. And it's surely has affected his hiring choices.
Well, and I think that's part of the thing for me, too, is like, where's my piece?
Yeah.
Like, not P-I-C. E-C-E, P-E-A-C.
Oh, okay.
Like, where's my piece in things of like, am I going to escalate a conversation? I'm aware that sometimes maybe I'm not always as soft. And so people get a little bit more defensive when maybe they're communicating with me because he's not wrong. I am more aggressive. I just haven't gotten fired from jobs because mm-hmm. I'm aggressive. And so it just wasn't worth it to me. Like,
right.
this was not a relationship that I had to prolong. This was like my last day on my way out of this job.
Yeah.
He thought he was like instilling some like fatherly wisdom on me or something stupid. And so
sometimes I think we can say to people like, oh, well, if you don't say anything, things will never change. But what that does is it puts the burden on the people who are the, you know, recipients of discrimination to change the system instead of the people who are perpetuating the discrimination. Mm-hmm. Like, you have no responsibility to make him change. Like, and people will say, oh, if you don't, you know, like if you're a victim and you don't do something like it, you're the one who's letting this continue to happen. Well, I call BS on that and say, you know, your only responsibility in that moment is to yourself and to take care of and protect yourself and do what, you know, you think it's going to be right. Mm-hmm. And when I'm making the personal decision as to what do I need to protect my peace or do my part, which is kind of how I think about it, I think about, are there people in this situation with less power than me who are going to be adversely impacted by this behavior?
Yeah.
And if there are, and frequently there are, then I will take the call out role. Because the point of calling out isn't to get someone to change their underlying beliefs. It's just to get them to stop their negative behavior from impacting others. Because, you know, if you're like, okay, well, that was really inappropriate and that's not funny, and what you're actually doing is like pushing misogyny on me, he's going to get defensive and like not be on board.
Right.
But if he sees that his behavior is unacceptable, you know, then maybe he's going to be less likely to express that to people who are in lesser positions, you know, who have less ability to speak up than me. So that's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah, I think that that's good to understand. This is kind of a tangent, but I think sometimes I have canned responses when I'm ready for certain kind of comments, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so for me personally, I have been asked if I am pregnant when I'm not pregnant way too many times. Mm. And one time I was at the gym and I, you know, we're in this class, I'm working out hard, you know, all this stuff. And this lady said, how you feeling? And I said, I feel great. You know, how do you feel? And she goes, well, I give you so much credit. And I was like, I give you so much credit too. Like, we're working hard. And she goes, well, how far along are you? And I was like, I'm not pregnant. And I said, I had it that day. Like, so often in those specific situations, how often do women walk away and feel like crap about themselves? Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. Like, okay, I'm overweight, but like, you're just a jerk of a person. And so I literally said to this woman, I'm like, well, at least I'm here making myself better. You will always be a terrible person. I was just like, I had had it. I was just done. And so, you know, I've kind of gotten to that point where if I'm asked if I'm pregnant when I'm not, I make comments like that. And so there's other situations where it's like, if you have, you know, the same kind of things come up, I probably mm-hmm. would have a better response to this previous boss of mine mm-hmm. or in certain situations, you know, my friend pitching to male doctors mm-hmm. or whatnot, you know, you kind of come up with like the way you're going to respond so that you're ready for that. And mm-hmm. that helps probably the situation a little bit.
Yeah. And I love this whole idea of like, kind of like practicing. So you're ready, you know, when yeah. the comments come up and be like, I'm sorry, but my body is none of your business and you yeah. can keep your ideas to yourself or whatever. And thing about like, you know, pitching to male doctors, this I think comes a lot down to kind of our stereotypes about what authority and like business savvy look like, you know? And so like that group might not necessarily be thinking overtly, oh, she doesn't know what she's talking about. But if they have beliefs that like authority and business savvy are more likely to look like a man and like the traits we associate with masculinity, which by the way, is something that is just the process of social like agreement. There's like, we kind of like make up what counts as masculine and that changes across history and time and situations. And, mm-hmm. you know, if she doesn't have a lot of control over that environment, like if I'm looking at that and I'm thinking like, okay, those doctors need training about what their belief in stereotypes and authority does when they are, you know, looking at people, but she doesn't have any control over that. So she has two choices, you know, kind of the same ones we're stuck with before, play into their stereotypical beliefs about her and try to find like authority that way, or defy it and look for the group that's going to think she's awesome anyways. Mm-hmm. And that's a very personal choice and is a very personal decision. Nobody knows the situation that you're in better than you are. But
well, and I think really finding when it comes to business, life, partnerships, whatever, I think that that's a good across the board thing to think of is that you want to play in the circles that are the right circles for you. And so sometimes in business, it feels like, or probably personal life too, I don't want to, you know, there's value in this little part of it, but you know, I really do feel bad about myself because of comments that are made, or, you know, and it's hard to kind of walk away for business or even relationships. Maybe I really like 90% of things, but this 10% of a relationship with somebody is just, these comments are really terrible and they're hurtful. And so sometimes it can be hard to walk away, but then just having the faith that like the right community will be there when you need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think if we take a step back and think about that, like that's the strategy I've chosen, you know, and I agree. But also we have to acknowledge that space that's going to be friendly to people is impacted by their identities that create stereotypes around them, like gender, like race, like ability. And so people who have more of those more marginalized identities are going to have fewer communities that they're going to feel at home in. And that's just the reality of a hierarchical society that says that some people are, you know, more authoritative or more successful or whatever than others. The other thing is we can't always escape that stuff. You know, and so even like me who does this work, you know, when I encounter this kind of stuff, it still like hurts, you know, mm-hmm. and it takes like days, you know, to feel better. And that's a reality of living with in a society that looks at me and, you know, I'm not going to always meet those expectations, or I'm going to try to resist them or whatever. We know that like basically this is like the traumas of living in a society that has discrimination. And we know that there are lifelong traumas that impact marginalized communities. Most of the research around this is around race. And so it's about like the generational legacies of trauma of living with this kind of commentary and negativity in your life on a daily basis to the, you know, extent that you can't minimize it. And so, yes, we can try to curate our feeds and try to curate our communities. But the truth is that some of us are going to be able to more escape those kinds of negative interactions than others of us. And we should have compassion for ourselves and for others, too, when we're struggling with this kind of thing.
It's interesting that, you know, you just said there's certain situations where you can kind of control it more than others. I was just seeing, I saw something somebody posted about like more women in trades and like they want more women in like construction. And I'm like, there ain't no way. Like, I don't know that I could get paid enough money to be on a construction site. Like, I just think, you know, when we're looking at getting women into certain situations, are we looking at the training necessary of construction workers to put a woman foreman on a, you know what I mean? Like I just,
okay. So one of the things we also know from sociological research about things like construction and really male dominated trades is that those are actively hostile job sites to women. Mm-hmm. So even women, it's not necessarily that women don't want to be in those jobs or that they aren't getting the training to be in, but those, some fields work actively to keep women out.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like these people who want to have a push for more women in engineering or more, and I don't know that engineering is necessarily as hostile as a construction site.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I think that, you know, some of the comments that offhanded comments that people think they make are not as offhanded. And, you know, a woman may go home and hear that cat calling all night long because they're just, it's running through their head of how they were mistreated. So when we're looking at trying to change kind of some of these stereotypical job roles or whatnot, are we looking at those industries across the board? So are we looking at the employees on a construction job site that we may want to put a female foreman on? Are we looking at training these workers so that they're respecting this, you know, female in a male dominated world?
I mean,
how do we make those change? I mean, yeah, great. Have women in job roles that aren't necessarily stereotypical female roles, but if you're not doing the work behind the scenes, it doesn't matter. Like no one's going to want to be there.
Exactly. It like this is like, I think the problem of thinking like, oh, we just need this one woman foreman. No, it's actually a whole system and all of these underlying beliefs that would need to change to make that space equitable and safe and like feeling comfortable for someone to go to work every day. And that's not something that one woman foreman is going to be able to change.
Yeah. I had a situation where somebody kind of said, well, you know how you're, you know, you're viewed around here. And I was like, I don't know. And they're like, well, you don't take shit from people and you get, I'm like, is this a bad thing? Is this a, you know, but it was more like, well, you're viewed as this hard ass. And I'm like, but do you really know me? Like, have you taken the time to understand who I am or you're just judging me from, you know, and it to me, it's like, this is who I am and I can get stuff done and I'm okay with who I am. So I have that stronger personality, but how many people do that where they want to change their behavior because of the situation they're in, they feel like they need to, and it wears on their self-esteem and mm-hmm. whatnot.
So, I mean, you can like look at, you know, we know that we don't have equal gender representation across, you know, all fields and disciplines and, you know, job types. So you can either say that's because, you know, women aren't good at construction, or you can say that there's something else going on. And, you know, if you don't believe that women just aren't good at construction, then you have to look at, you know, all of the other things. But if you don't want to look at all of the other things, you might just say, well, women aren't as good with a hammer, or women aren't as good at math. And that way you don't have to recognize all of these systemic things that go into deciding that being a hard ass as a woman is a bad thing.
By the way, my degree is in mathematics and there was 8 women and 2 men in my college program. So is there any last minute kind of to wrap things up? Anything that you think that people would want to hear or know about resources?
Well,
for this kind of specific.
Okay. I just have kind of a couple things for you to think about. One is, one of the ways that you can help in a situation if you see this stuff happening is to be a good bystander and intervene. And one of the ways to think about bystander intervention is the 5 Ds: distract, delay, direct, delegate, and document. And the thing is, basically, you're trying to relieve the situation of distress from the person who is experiencing it. And that could be like using humor, or it could be, you know, calling that person out directly, you know. So think about ways that when you see this stuff, can you intervene in a way that's going to not be too costly for you, but that can help create a better environment in what you're in. Also, you'll notice document is on there. So if you're theoretically, none of us are supposed to experience discrimination based on our sexual and gender identity in the workplace. That's really difficult to actually enforce. But if you are someone who's experiencing something, documentation will help a lot. And when I think about like sexual harassment, I think there are all these like legal definitions. To me, the easiest way to think about sexual harassment is unwanted sexual attention. This doesn't have to be touching. It can be comments. It can be, you know, so if this is the kind of thing that you're experiencing, like you shouldn't be experiencing it. Like theoretically, that's not supposed to be happening to you.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that necessarily you're going to be able to get it to stop. You're going to have to figure out that way. But to just reinforce, like if you're experiencing unwanted sexual attention, you shouldn't have to deal with that. So, you know, document what's happening to you and then think about what are some ways that you can navigate it to try and make your situation better. Mm-hmm. But this stuff is real. It happens.
Well, and I want to point out too that it's not just a boss and an employee situation.
Yeah.
It can be coworkers. Mm-hmm. It can be a situation where, you know, a lot of our listeners may be running their own business, mm-hmm. or so it could be, you know, customers that you have too. Mm-hmm. All of those count kind of in this uncomfortable, misogynistic world of comments and the way we're left to feel.
I was at, we did a screening for this biopic about Simone Weil at the beginning of March. And she was the first woman to lead the European Parliament. She was a Holocaust survivor. It was just an incredible film. But one of the students there asked me, do you think women still really are not equal? And I was like, yes. Definitely. I mean, all you have to do is look at, you know, the gender distribution across hierarchies, like look at salaries, look at, you know, wage inequality. So sometimes I think we might get feedback like, oh, is it really that bad? Well, if it's not equitable, if everyone can't see over the fence, then yeah, to me, it is that bad. And it is something worth recognizing and saying, this isn't good enough for me and it shouldn't be good enough for you either.
Well, and I think sometimes people are like, well, it's not as bad as it was. Okay.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
So?
Yeah. But I mean, I think I read something the other day, which you own your own home, right?
Yeah.
Too. Women were only allowed to buy a home without a male co-signer in 1976. So like that long ago. And now I think it's almost, maybe it's over 50% are women owned homes, but it's pretty like mixed, but it's just like, it's crazy because that's not that long ago.
No, it's not.
You know, that women were not allowed to buy their, you know, and yes, we are now, but ignorance is not necessarily, it's just not knowing sometimes. And so teaching people, but it's not a crutch that people should lean on, but there are people who just are like, they really truly think, well, I'm doing the right thing. And you're like, well, maybe you're not really doing the right thing. I appreciate you coming in, Helen. It's always great to talk with you. If you want to know more about the Women's Center, you can go to
tntech.edu/women.
Women. And then on social media, it's
at TN Tech Women's Center.
TN Tech Women's Center. So I really appreciate it. And you're a professor. You know, you do the research on all this stuff. So yeah. I think that our listeners really appreciate kind of the scientific aspects and the research aspects and not just me babbling on. And so I love that you've done your homework on everything. And so can't wait to have you back in here sometime.
Life is so great.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. If you want to know more about Powered by Her, head over to poweredbyher.com. Join the community, support the cause, and we'll see you next week.